and welcome to this week's edition of Megan Fun of Sports. Happy 420! Eddie, are you celebrating?
I'm celebrating by working. A lot of shows today, maybe I'll get a chance to relax later and watch some of the playoff action.
To indulge in some 420 festivities?
If there's time today, okay. it's midweek, you know, the Extra Points Network, it's me, Meatballs, we're pulling a lot of the weight together. So it's midweek, a lot going on with shows. So we got to make sure that's all squared away before you can partake.
I know it would be really funny if we were both high during this podcast. I am not high because I am actually moving, and moving while high would not be a great task because I'm sure I'd lose half of my shit. So anyways, this is our first episode of Megan Fun of Sports without Megan Gailey. She has not yet had her baby, but she is due literally any minute. I checked in with her yesterday. She had her last appointment. No sign of baby yet, but she's getting closer. I think she's going to be induced this week. So we will keep you all posted with everything to do with Megan Gailey and the baby. But right now on Megan Fun of Sports, we are so excited. We have a wonderful guest joining us this week. Her name is Amina Smith. She hails from NBC Sports Boston. She's going to talk to us about all things Celtics. But before we get into that, we have some things to talk about here between Eddie and I. If you were not following on social media, which I hope that you were, I ran the Boston Marathon. I feel like this is such a weird way to start the podcast because I'm like, let's talk about me. But I did run the Boston Marathon. Eddie is a big fan of the Boston Marathon. We have had very different Boston Marathon experiences. But, I mean, there's a chance that for both of us, the Boston Marathon ends in a hospital visit. So for you and your college drinking and for me and my running, it can all end at the same place.
There, it's a special day in Boston for those who have never been. Obviously, the Patriots, well, the Red Sox play, what is it, like 11 o'clock first pitch around there? Yep. So obviously, the Fenway area near Kenmore is pretty jam-packed, and I was lucky enough to go to Boston University, which is very close to Fenway, and also not too far from where the finish line is if you're near our South Campus. So, I mean, obviously, that day, if you get a nice weather day, you know, low 60s, I think one of the years that I had, like, low 60s, the sun was out, you have the Sox playing, you have all the people there cheering on the runners. It is a really a magical day there in Boston.
But for Eddie and all the college kids in Boston, Patriots Day, which is also Marathon Monday, is about the drinking. So it is a holiday. There's no classes. Eddie and his buddies would wake up. They'd do some kegs and eggs. And then they'd mosey on out to yell and scream at all of the runners. And I am one of those runners. And we support, condone, and appreciate, encourage this behavior because we want as loud and as crazy of people as you can get, especially at that point where Eddie's talking about, because at Fenway, you have 1 mile to go and you're thinking about ending your life.
I can't even begin to fathom, like, it is really funny how, like, my day, you know, when I was in school, wake up at, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning with your buddies you're probably getting ready, stretching, you know, putting on like athletic gear to go run, getting your pump up music. And we were doing the total opposite of work. We're just going to people's houses. We're wearing all these different sports jerseys and we're drinking and like hugging everyone. And it is a lot of fun. It is a weird juxtaposition for you and the runners who have been training for, I guess, it had to be months on end, running 26 miles. And then you have us who are just like, you know, chugging beers. And it is a vastly different experience, but it is a great day.
We are all waking up around the same time because the Boston Marathon, I started running this past year at 10:25, but I had to be on the bus from the Boston Common at 7:25. And for those of you who don't know, the Boston Marathon is a point-to-point course. So you start 26.2 miles away from Boston in a little town called Hopkinton, and you run straight into Boston. So that morning, as Eddie is cracking open his first beer, I am, you know, having a Gatorade, having water. I've probably cried about three times because I'm so nervous. I'm getting on this bus. Everyone is full of jitters. Everyone has to pee a million times. And we check down 26.2 miles as Eddie and his buddies are in jerseys. But we love it. We want you guys all liquored up for when we get to that point.
It's an incredible achievement, and it's like, it's really funny that we roll out of bed, don't do really much of anything but yell drunkenly, and you guys are the heroes of that day. It's incredible. I don't know how you did it. I don't know how you ran those many miles. Like, in my best cardio days, I could probably get anywhere from 3 to 5, and I'm feeling pretty good about myself. And it's like, it takes a lot out of you, but to run that much, I mean, I know you were saying with Sal a couple of days ago, the beginning part of your running journey there in Boston was totally fine. It was near the end of it, but I just feel like I would hit mile 3 and I'd be like, I'm done with this. I'm tired of music. I'm tired of podcasts. I'm tired of running near these other smelly, sweaty people. And I just want to get out of there. So it is an incredible this week in terms of achievements for the Megans, between one having a child and you completing that. It is unbelievable. So two things that I cannot fathom.
It is a big week for the Megans. Well, my Boston Marathon experience, this was my fourth time doing it, and I will do it again, but I think I'm going to take a little break from Boston Marathons, because the Boston Marathon is a freaking beast. And I've been running since I was 8. I will keep this short because I know people get very, very checked out as soon as people talk about distance running. But I've been running since I was 8, decided to do marathons after college. Did Boston, ended up in the hospital for 5 days, and then really wanted to get back at Boston and just prove myself on this course. So I did PR on Monday. I ran a 3:06:30. I wanted to break 3 hours. And I think Harry, our friend Harry from Against All Odds, put a curse on me. And he guessed that I would run 3 hours and 6 minutes. And God damn it, Harry, I ran 3 hours, 6 minutes, and 30 seconds when I wanted to break 3. And Eddie, I think this is something that could potentially be talked about. I mean, we had, the Black Sox scandal with the White Sox. They didn't win a World Series for 88 years. You had the Cubs and their scandal, and they didn't win a World Series for over 100 years. You had the Red Sox and the curse of the great Bambino. They didn't win a World Series for 86 years. I might not break 3 hours for 80-something years, all because of Harry and this curse that he put on me.
Harry, his bets lately may have not been going so well, but he had a hit one. Unfortunately, it was the bet against you running this thing. But I will say, maybe you should just skip running the Boston Marathon and then just take a page out of my book and then just do the marathon Monday the way that all the college kids do, where you just show up there, but just knock on a random dorm room or a frat house door, be like, hey, I used to run the marathon. Now I'm just here to do the kegs and eggs and drink and watch the other people run. That's your next step.
I do think I'm going to do a beer mile. So I run with a group here in Orlando, and my coach said that when I'm done doing the marathon, I can do a beer mile. I've never done one before, but I think I might be able to do a beer mile in sub-7. Maybe I just am a little too cocky about that, and I'm underestimating the fact that I'm going to puke. And I guess if you puke, you have to run another lap. I guess that's the rules with the beer, beer mile. But I think in the next month or so, I'm going to do a beer mile. So I will keep everybody posted with that. Thank you all for supporting me through the marathon. It really meant the world. People were tracking me, which is awesome. And I felt all of your support out there. And I'm not just saying that, seriously, I did, because there were moments where I wanted to quit, because running is not always fun. It's almost never fun. And the last 6 miles, man, it was tough. So thank you all for supporting me, Eddie, Sal, the whole crew at Extra Points, but everyone except Harry. Harry, fuck you. Okay. That was Talking Boston Marathon. The NFL season is a long way away, but they always find a way to stay in the news, especially today. We had breaking news that Debo Samuel requests a trade. He wants out of San Francisco. This is shocking to us that it comes before Jimmy Garoppolo is leaving San Francisco. There are rumors that he could be headed to the New York Jets. I want him headed to New England. I'm sure, Eddie, you wouldn't say no if he went to the Giants. What do you make of Debo Samuel?
Definitely wouldn't be the worst thing if he went to the Giants, especially with Kadarius Toney not wanting to show up to the optional offseason workouts here. But I do think the Jets make so much sense in this scenario if he is being traded. I guess he first said he's going to skip out the workouts because he wanted the new contract. Now it's a full-blown request, which is odd, because the Niners are obviously, they're a great team. They always seem to exceed expectations. I mean, really, the only reason why they don't make the playoffs every year is if they have the injury bug, which happened 2 seasons ago. But really, a great coach, great GM, front office. So it's strange that he wants to go. But it has been a strange offseason for the Niners, because why do they still have Jimmy G. And like, why do they still have Trey Lance, who's like may not even start if they wasted a very, very high pick on him? Why are they still linked kind of to Tom Brady? Why are they kind of linked to Deshaun Watson? A lot of question marks going on there. But like I said a bit ago, I think the Jets do make a lot of sense because the Niners don't have a first round pick. So what they could do is trade. The Jets have 4 and 10. I probably won't give up the 4 for him, but they would probably give up the 10. So the Jets trade the 10th pick and whatever else for Deebo Samuel. And now the Jets have another piece when they already have an okay kind of, you know, offensive talent there, like with Elijah Moore, a lot of people are high on. And I think Zach Wilson and year two will take the next step. But you add a guy like Deebo, who's a hybrid running back, a high, you know, receiver.
It changes your offense.
It makes your offense way more dynamic. It's a way different thing. And we always see, you know, the Bengals just did it recently, but every year there's a team that's in last place or kind of a cellar dweller that finds their way to skyrocket and become the next hot team in the league. And I said this on -3 a few weeks ago, and I was like, I just still feel like the way that Salah and they're kind of building this in Joe Douglas, they're building this Jets team. I would not be shocked if they go and get a piece like Deebo Samuel plus the 4th pick, if the Jets are like a legitimate good team this upcoming season. So I think that's a really good move for both parties, for the Niners to get the 10th pick and for the Jets. I think it's a great move.
Well, you bring up a good point with the Niners too, because not only did they maybe potentially waste a pick to go get Trey Lance, but they gave up a lot to get that to get Trey Lance, including that first round pick. So they could potentially get that back now that Deebo wants out. But then you wonder, like, who is starting quarterback? Do they believe in Trey Lance? Is Jimmy G going to be there? Why does Tom Brady's name keep getting floated around literally everywhere? He's floated around in Miami. He's floated around in 49ers. I mean, that's a whole different story that we don't have to get into today. I hope he doesn't go to the Jets, because that's not good for my Patriots, who have no wide receivers. And I'm terrified that they will draft one, because they will mess it up just like they messed up N'Keal Harry. So just sign Deebo. Sign Deebo. He can give you that hybrid combination that Bill Belichick loves. And then we don't have to worry on drafting another bust like N'Keal Harry. So that's my thought on Deebo Samuel and the Patriots.
To make you feel better about the Pats, I do think this draft class in terms of the skill position, maybe not. Some people aren't sold in the quarterbacks, running backs. You may not even have a first rounder, but I think with the receivers, I mean, I was wrong on N'Keal Harry, because I love N'Keal Harry. I watch a lot of Arizona State games, but I feel like this draft class with the receivers, there's so many good guys. So I feel like even if the Pats don't get in on the Deebo Samuel, I feel like if they just, it's like throw a dart at the board and you're going to be fine with one of the receivers. But
Eddie, that was N'Keal Harry's draft class, and there was one dart that didn't hit, and that dart was N'Keal Harry, and that happened to be the pick that the Patriots made. They've had a terrible track record of drafting wide receivers, so I'm not sold. Bringing up the draft, I feel like this is one of the more boring drafts in recent memory, and maybe that's just because we're all obsessed with quarterbacks and skill position players. But I'm not really feeling hype for this draft, and it's under 2 weeks away.
I was just saying this to Dave a little bit ago, and like, I think Matt Miller, who works for ESPN now, a big draft guy, wrote on Twitter. He's like, I've been doing this for my entire career. And he's like, this has been the hardest year to mock a draft. And I just said, is it because of the lack of high-end quarterbacks? Who knows? But again, every single year that people say this is always a quarterback who shines. Like, there was no hype around Josh Allen. There was no hype around Patrick Mahomes, and every year, and the guys that had the hype are unfortunately like a Baker Mayfield or a Sam Darnold or et cetera. So I feel like one of these quarterbacks, at least one, will shine. I think that, you know, it's boring because there's a lot of O linemen, a lot of D linemen, but those are how good teams are made foundationally. And I think with the receiving core, like I was saying, this is pretty good in this draft. So I guess you could say it's slightly boring at the flashy players, but I think there are a lot of solid players that are good to build your team from the, you know, inward out in the trenches. So I think we'll get shocked too. My prediction is the Lions take a quarterback at 2, and I'm guessing Malik Willis.
Oh, that brings us to our next point with the quarterbacks, and then that's breaking news. I mean, if the Lions go take a quarterback that early, I think that would shock the draft, and there'd be a lot more interest in it. So Malik Willis and Kenny Pickett are the two top quarterbacks that could go in this year's draft. And the over-under on their draft spot, Malik Willis is 9.5, and Kenny Pickett is 10.5. So you like the under on this bet.
I do. I like the under, not only because of the Lions, but because you have the Panthers and you have other teams that are further back that may want to move up, like leapfrog, like the Steelers come to mind.
Yep.
You know, the Saints next to. So I think, especially the McAdoo comments, but with the Lions at two, it's the thing where how do you prolong your life in the NFL if you're Dan Campbell and whoever's in the front office? Is you attach yourself to a quarterback, you know, Jared Goff, and I was a guy that did believe in him. I thought he would be a serviceable kind of like a serviceable option. Obviously, losing a Super Bowl, if he won that Super Bowl, people will view him differently. But he's not the guy. Like he didn't want to be in Detroit. And I don't think that Detroit is going to stick with him as their future. They made a couple, you know, they drafted pretty well recently. They have a lot of foundational players in the interior. So I think that they have to eventually get the guy to be the face of the franchise. And when you have a number two pick, people say it's easy. Oh, you know, next year is the better year for quarterbacks. Go get Bryce Young. Well, you're not going to always be in the top three to get a quarterback.
Well, and even if you are, look at what Cleveland's dealing with Baker Mayfield right now. Right. I mean, they picked him number one overall, and you think this is our guy, the face of the franchise. Now, I'm a little less harsh on Jared Goff than you are. I think Jared Goff and a Jimmy Garoppolo, a Kirk Cousins, same, all to me. So I'm not that out on Jared Goff. Do sure. I think he's the face of a franchise? No, but I think he's a solid bridge guy. So if the Lions really do believe in Kenny Pickett or Malik Willis, it's not a bad thing to, you know, take a pick on him. But I don't know. To me, I almost feel like it would be equivalent to taking a flyer on a quarterback. I mean, they may pan out, but there's the fact that 9.5, 10.5 is where they're kind of slotted, projected to go. Hey, look, Tom Brady, fourth rounder, but it's not, that doesn't happen very often. Usually those top quarterbacks are early on. And yeah, there's a lot of busts. It's a coin toss, but I'm not so sure.
It's a mixture of a lot of the smoke screens. A lot of the teams at the early part of the draft don't really need a quarterback. But like I was saying before with like Campbell extending his career, it's like the best way to do it is by drafting a quarterback. If you go, you know, you have four wins with Jared Goff again, what does that really do for you? Nothing. You want to see progress. And at least if you stink it up this year, which by all accounts, the line should be pretty mediocre, is at least you have Malik Willis or Kenny Pickett. I think they probably take Willis. And then you can be like, okay, well, it was a learning year. And then all of a sudden now Dan Campbell definitely has that third year locked in and you're going to feel better about it. Like, oh, we have the young gun. You want to face the franchise. When was the last time the Lions like had somebody you were excited over? It's probably what Calvin Johnson, even when Matt Stafford was there, it was like, oh, no, the year Stafford will throw for, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 yards, but they're not going to make the playoffs. So it's like you didn't have that buzz. There was no excitement. You need a new face. You go and draft Malik Willis at two. Plus, you have the other first rounders. You could still get a player, an impact player that will play this year. And you're not asking Malik Willis to step in and play, which is also a good thing, too, because now Aaron Rodgers, I know, has a 3-year deal, but he is getting older. The division may be a little bit easier. People don't really love Kirk Cousins. So the Bears are still dealing with their issues with Justin Fields, who's very young, was pretty mediocre last year, too. So you go and draft Malik Willis at two, pick another player in your first round. You have Penny Sewell, the left tackle. You have some good pieces there on defense. And I think that that's the way to go in this draft. And yeah,
it's bold. It's bold.
The Hutchinson pick is fun, but it's a homegrown kid. But I don't think it's a necessarily a need right now. They need a quarterback.
It's bold. I mean, you don't get long in the NFL to prove yourself. And this is year two of Dan Campbell. So, hey, I'd love it because the Lions are going to be on Hard Knocks and there'd be nothing more exciting than Dan Campbell, you know, taking a quarterback number two. We get Malik Willis. So 9.5 is the draft spot number for Malik Willis. Eddie Spaghetti is taking the under. He might have just talked me into it. I think I might take the under as well. But you did bring up something in your rant that I want to talk about, and it's Sam Darnold with the Carolina Panthers. Poor Sam Darnold. This guy, I mean, he was a darling coming out of USC. Goes number two to the Jets. Just a terrible situation. And we all wanted to believe that Sam Darnold's better days were ahead of him with the Carolina Panthers. Unfortunately, the way this season unfolded, it's not looking too good for Sam Darnold. And Ben McAdoo met the media the other day, and he slipped up a little bit. This is one of my favorite things because you know, I love when coaches and general managers blame the media for their mistakes. And this is exactly what Ben McAdoo did. So he was asked if Sam Darnold is the Panthers' starting quarterback, and Ben McAdoo answers the question. And then he turns it around on the media and is like, wait, this is your fault because you made me say this, even though he decided to say everything that came out of his mouth. Eddie, we're going to play the clip right now.
And you look at Sam as your starting quarterback? Sam is our starting quarterback, yes.
1 minute, 37 seconds later.
You know, one of the things I've been working on is being better talking to you people. So, you know, announcing the starting quarterback here, I just put my foot in the mouth. So that wasn't something I should have said.
Oh, my God. All he had to say was, we're going to evaluate the position and see how it goes.
Coach speak, yeah.
All, I mean, really, I know Bill Belichick gets a bad rap for the way he speaks to the media, but because he doesn't say anything, he can't really get in trouble for saying the wrong thing. So Ben McAdoo needs to take a page out of Bill Belichick's book and maybe not declare someone the starting quarterback that isn't the starting quarterback and then blame the media for doing it.
Look, first of all, Ben McAdoo, if he showed like with his time at the Giants that he was unfit to be a head coach, and it seems like he kind of just was lucky to be attached to Aaron Rodgers. And it's also strange too that like the Panthers, everyone was excited about them because they go and hire Matt Rhule, they go and hire Joe Brady from LSU, obviously from the Joe Burrow, that team, the championship team fame. And then you go and bring in McAdoo, and like now your quarterback, like Sam Darnold is the guy, and you have McAdoo who was like a joke. And it's just like, what a bad time for them. And they have, you could argue, the best, you know, offensive weapon when healthy in football, and Christian McCaffrey. I just feel so bad for that guy being stuck there. So, I mean, yes, you're 100% right, Megan. It should have been like, you know, we have Sam, we're happy with them, but we, you know, we're looking at some guys in draft. Like, you don't even have to go that into detail. You could just be like, yeah, we're going to go through camp and we're going to evaluate and we're going to see what happens. But I mean, the writing's on the wall for Darnold. He's a guy that, if you want to give him excuses, you know, obviously with the coaching change with the Jets, the lack of weapons, like the whole mono stretch, and then, you know, getting shipped out to a team where McCaffrey was injured. So it's just never been a smooth path for him. But you could also argue he's never really shown the flashes of being elite level guy. So there's still rumors of Baker Mayfield. And I think their best option is to just draft a young guy, draft Pickett. If they want to take a local kid, take Sam Howell, who I still like. There was a great deep ball. Had an underwhelming year, but I still think he's going to be okay. So yeah, McAdoo, less words, and the Panthers need to change a quarterback.
Speaking of Baker Mayfield, he did not show up for the first day of the Browns offseason training program. This is a surprise to no one because last week Baker Mayfield made headlines when he was on a podcast basically saying that he is displeased about everything that happened in Cleveland, which I don't really blame him. He didn't have the best experience in Cleveland, to say the least. He took the team to the playoffs. He had four different head coaches. And then obviously things didn't end well for Baker Mayfield in Cleveland. He's no longer their starting quarterback because they have Deshaun Watson. But Deshaun Watson's probably going to have to sit out a couple games, so maybe they do need Baker. But Baker wants out of Cleveland. You think Carolina, but I just saw a rumor on Twitter that he could be headed to Dave Dameshek's favorite team, the Pittsburgh Steelers. What do you make of this Baker Mayfield nonsense? Because I thought this podcast, well, I'm not completely out on Baker. I don't think that he's a bust completely yet. I think that he kind of gives himself a few too many pats on the back and gives himself a little bit too much credit, especially when you look at the way that teammates think of Baker Mayfield. Like, OBJ and Baker had beef, and OBJ left. And I know he got hurt in the Super Bowl, but he has a Super Bowl ring, and Baker Mayfield doesn't. And he's rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. I think this guy's got a really, really big ego.
It would definitely suit Baker to do less commercials, to do less speaking, to make sure that his wife, I believe it's his wife, did not post on social media. All that does not help his cause. I will say that, you know, the obviously having a big, big name, a big star like Odell Beckham in your locker room and having his dad comment and stuff is never easy as well. Although what I will say about Baker is that he doesn't strike me as a guy who doesn't care about football, which I think is a great thing. He's clearly a competitive guy. He wants to win. He wants to perform well. And I think that like having a chip on your shoulder now and your second go around with a new team is going to be a different version of him. He doesn't have the physical, tools that maybe other quarterbacks have. He's a smaller guy. Like, he is pretty mobile, and he dealt all last year with a really messed up left shoulder. I think him coming back healthy, and it, you know, I like the Steelers option more than the Panthers option. I think the Steelers are obviously, they're always, always have a winning record. Yep. They have Tomlin, who's been head coach there for, I feel like, my entire life. They always just find guys in mid rounds in the draft. Like, they're just a really well oiled machine.
They're
and
stable.
Putting him there, and yes, and then having the running game they have with Najee, and they have a decent weapons, obviously, with Chase Claypool and Deontay Johnson. You put him there, and like, what? Is he going to have to beat out Mitch Trubisky and Mason Rudolph? I think that's fine. I think he should do that. And I was just saying about, like, Darnold, where Darnold never really had the flashes where you're like, this guy is legit. Baker did. Baker legitimately had flashes where you're like, he is really good. He could be a top-level player. And obviously, just things didn't happen that way. If you want to blame, I saw a recent thing about, like, Kevin Stefanski's system with him was not it wasn't really conducive because it was like a timing based thing. And obviously, if we watch Baker in college and into the pros, he's a kind of on the fly makeshift, you know, kind of street ball.
Yeah, he's always kind of freelancing.
Sure.
I mean, I know if we had Megan here, she would find a way to feel bad for Baker, and she would find a way to have sympathy for Baker.
Yeah.
My whole thing with Baker, and there's part of me that feels bad for him. Look, out of options you could get in the NFL, and a lot of your success as an NFL quarterback has to do with what team you get drafted to. And I think his situation that he got drafted into obviously wasn't very ideal. But right. My thing with Baker, if he wants to get out of Cleveland, doing this interview does nothing good for you to sign for another team. It only makes you look worse. So I just think that Baker should just be quiet, because you already have the sympathy card. But now if you talk about it, people are going to maybe get the wrong idea about who you are.
Yeah, and that's another great point too. You said, Megan, is like that the situation does matter, and that's the thing that I think in this current age of the NFL with these otherworldly talents like Patrick Mahomes, if you want to throw Josh Allen in there, that's fine too. And the age of social media, where it's like we're forgetting that, you know, it is a team sport, and you have 10 other guys with you on offense, and you have to have a good coach in place. Like, not every quarterback has to take a bum roster and elevate them. Like, they're just not all of them are capable of doing that. And I think as like fans and people who tweet and follow everything, like you just forget that. And like, it's okay if Baker isn't Patrick Mahomes, but also it's like, if you put him in a situation where he could succeed, like if Kirk Cousins could do it and other quarterbacks in the league can do it, like I think Baker could do it also. Now, also to your point of like him kind of being a loudmouth and a hothead, it's not a great mix because he does need some help. But like, you know, his best case scenario is to be, you know, my team, the Giants, Daniel Jones, another good example. He's a guy that like needs a good supporting cast, needs a good coach, clearly, because you could see what he did in his rookie year. He was okay. And I think Baker takes a page out of his book, and kind of if Jones is, you know, saying stuff in the media and having his girlfriend tweet stuff, it would be a total disaster.
Especially with the New York media. They would eat him alive.
Totally.
But I do give it to Baker, because if football doesn't work out, he's really good at acting. I think he's fantastic in the commercials. I think he would need a little rebrand if he was going to do that. And I'm not really sure what Baker's brand would be, because
insurance.
I thought like he, yeah, I mean,
progressive.
Is Gronk progressive insurance, or what's Gronk? He's the military
Gronk,
insurance.
Yeah. Gronk was trying to steal Valor. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So he was the military insurance, I guess. Yeah. Baker could be insurance man. He has a future in Hollywood. He definitely has a future in acting, but he might need a little bit of a rebrand in order to do it if football doesn't work out. But hey, Baker, we think football can work out for you, and I'm sure Dave Dameshek would love to take you on the Steelers. And maybe if he goes to Carolina, his wife and Christian McCaffrey's girlfriend, Olivia Coppola, could be friends, and we would talk about it in the show because we love football wags.
She and Olivia was my classmate at BU, so I used to know her.
Olivia was?
Yeah, for real.
Ooh.
Hand of God. She sat next to me in three classes my freshman year. She was quite nice.
Wow.
Yeah, but I said,
did
you know,
she always show up looking like Miss Universe?
Yes, she showed up dressed to the nines. I'd be showing up in like a hockey t-shirt and like Crocs, and it's like 8 a.m. on a Monday, and she's talking about like the humanities work, and I'm like, are you actually talking to me right now? And you're talking about the work. And she would keep like her grades in the book. Like, it sounds creepy, but she sat next to me, so please don't attack me. But
Eddie is stalking Olivia.
No, not even. It was the opposite. It was like literally literally run away.
He was like, stalking you.
Oh man, like I remember in like the.
Oh my God, does Jada know about this?
No, she would never stalk. No, I said Olivia, like thanks, but no thanks. You're.
Oh my God.
I'm joking.
I would leave my husband for Olivia.
But no, I never. I literally was like, did not want to be seen. I remember going downstairs to the vending machine to get like a snack or a drink. Like 8 o'clock at night, and she'd be like going out in the town. I'm in like wearing like my pajamas, and I was like, I would have to like sprint. I'm like, do not look at my disgusting self while you're going out in the town. She's a very nice looking lady, very, very nice classmate, a very nice person. Good for her that she's now with my opinion is the best offensive player in football.
Well, she was with Danny Amendola, so I think this is
a bit of an upgrade. Yep.
Because although New England loved Danny Amendola and he had a great playoff career, he had a pretty good NFL career.
He did.
It to Danny Amendola. Yeah. But for Olivia Coppola's sake, Christian McCaffrey is a much better business decision. I am always amazed by the women who just look great all the time, because let me tell you, Fridays I look good, but it's because it takes me like an hour and a half for people to get me looking that way. Like they do the hair, they do the makeup, they do the whole thing. So when I'm not there and I don't have that, my hair is up as it is right now and I'm wearing a Ja Morant t-shirt and I'm not looking anywhere near fabulous. So the fact that Olivia showed up to every class looking like Miss Universe, I mean, she's got it going on. Good for her. Good for her.
Yeah, the family's great too. I forgot the name of her dad's restaurant. But we used to always, it's in Alston, and I used to go there a bunch. Lulu's, great spot. I mean, with that family, man, they're knocking out of the park.
Wow, Eddie, yeah. you even know the family?
I don't know the family. I know the
dad. All right, now you're trying to walk it back.
Eddie, I know.
Does she follow you on social media?
We're Facebook friends, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, not to brag.
Does she listen to the show?
Hopefully.
Okay, Olivia, yeah. we're big fans over here. And I know that you got Christian McCaffrey and Eddie's got a pretty Jada, but you never know. Life gets crazy. So just you never know. And hey, you know, I have a husband, but Olivia, you know. Anyways, we're gonna move on here and take a quick break before we get into our NBA talk. All right, we are back. We're going to talk a little NBA before we kick it to our interview with Amina Smith. And I just have to ask you all to please forgive me. I am doing this podcast while I am moving. So the interview with Amina is a little echoey because I was in an empty room. So I'm really sorry about it, but she's awesome. You should follow her everywhere. She knows her stuff. She's really cool. She works at NBC Sports Boston. And she's got your preview for tonight's game and a little bit extra on what you should look for as the Celtics continue their playoff journey, we will call it. All right, NBA playoffs are back. Eddie, I love the NBA playoffs. I know you're not an NBA guy, you're a hockey guy, but you can't not be excited about this time of the year, especially when you have the performances that we saw like last night with Jimmy Butler, John Morant's going crazy. We had the buzzer beater game with the Celtics and the Nets. What do you think of these playoffs so far?
Well, it got off to a sour note last night with the against all odds guys doing the race to 10 with the Hawks Heat. That was a bit of a bummer. And you know, obviously excited to hear what Amina has to say about the Nets Celtics. And I want to go and say this about this series is tonight, like the game, the Nets Celtics game two, like this is the must win game for the Nets, because if they lose and they go down 0-2 coming back to Brooklyn, it's just like all the Celtics have to do is just take one there and this series is over. And I'm going to come out and say that, number one, Kyrie having the chip on his shoulder, having this edge, is actually a good thing. It kind of reminds me of the old days of the NBA, with back in even like the 90s when the players were not friends. I'm a Knicks fan. Obviously, I'm used to like the Anthony Mason, Charles Oakley, those like really tough guys. And I think that having Kyrie, you know, basically having bad blood with the city of Boston, I think is a great thing. And you're not going to see a Kevin Durant performance like that. So I know his number right now, I think, is around 30.5. Points. It is 30.5 right now. Like, I would take the over on KD. I think he knows that this game, it means too much. If they take one in Boston, they come back to Brooklyn, it's a way different mindset. Plus, the other wild card is, like, you know, Steve Nash said that if Ben Simmons comes back, he said it's up to Ben Simmons to come back, and he's clear.
Oh, cool.
I'm not saying that Simmons is going to come in and he's going to be what he was in the early days of the Sixers, where he's, you know, dishing the ball out. But he is a huge guy, and if he could be a good defender like he's known to be, and you put him on Tatum, it changes the entire series. So I'm still riding high in the Nets. I think It's a must-win game. They're going to win this game. KD will be back. And if they get Ben Simmons to return in Brooklyn, which is what my guess would be, that he wants to come back when they're home, I think the series takes a massive swing.
I don't care about Ben Simmons at all, but and I don't even know what his impact would be. I know he's better on the defensive end of the floor, but and they do need the defense because they're going against this Celtics team that they have a lot of options. I think the Nets luck out that they're not facing a Celtics team with Time Lord, with Robert Williams. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you. And I do kind of think that the Celtics, my husband's out there, so I have to whisper it, but I think the Celtics might have stole one at home because the way that fourth quarter was going, I mean, Kyrie was on fire. And Jason Tatum did nothing in the fourth quarter until he hit that buzzer beater. And I kept saying, where's Tatum? Where's Tatum? This is where your superstar needs to take over the game. And I know he had 30 points, and I'm not taking anything away from him because he hit the buzzer beater. But if he doesn't hit that buzzer beater, what we're talking about is that Jason Tatum did nothing in the fourth quarter. So I think this is really time for the Celtics to step up. If they don't win that game, I think it goes south really, really quick. So
right. They
got very lucky that Marcus Smart passed the ball to Tatum, and Tatum, you know, was able to make the easy layup. But this Brooklyn team is scary, and that's why no one wanted to play them. Everyone was trying to go play Chicago. Obviously, Milwaukee's playing Chicago. I do think the Celtics are a better team, but when you have Kevin Durant on your team, it's just you can beat almost anyone. I would like to see more KD and Giannis instead of the Celtics against Giannis, but I'm contractually obligated by marriage to root for the Celtics. So that is what I will be doing for the sake of my marriage. I am really excited to see the way that Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum play together, because that's been the story since the two of them have been in Boston, that they can't find a way to make things happen together. But now's their chance. No better time than now to step up for the Celtics team. But another unbelievable series we have is my guy, John Morant, going up against the Timberwolves. And I think this is going to be a 7-game series. The first game, if you watched it, was a lot closer than the final score indicated. Last night was so much fun. Ja is just much watched television. And then you have Anthony Edwards, and then you have Karl Anthony Towns on the Timberwolves. And Minnesota is really fun right now. I know they get a lot of hate because they have Pat Beverly and he over celebrates. But listen, if you live in Minnesota, you haven't had success in, it's been probably since the 90s, early 2000s for Minnesota.
So
they can celebrate all they want. I'm excited about this series. And plus, I love John Morant's dad. I love Ja Morant's daughter. I love Ja Morant to watch him as a player, but man, when they show the shots of his dad, he is fine. I know if Megan were here, she would talk about how fine he is too, but Eddie, you can agree that's a good looking man.
Oh yeah, it is. And I mean, Hench has been big on the Grizzlies and how many guys they've had like missing and just kind of picked up whoever, and they still find a way to win games, and not only win games, but score points. I mean, they score 124 versus game. It's a tough series. I almost feel bad in a sense, because I'm not sure if I really could envision either one of these teams making it out of the West. I am glad it seems like the series could go seven, which I feel like most of these series in the first round will not, because they're all pretty lopsided. But this is definitely a fun series. And I was kind of rooting for my guy, A-Rod, his team. But you do make a convincing point to start rooting for the Grizzlies. And it's always good for the NBA to have another star. I mean, you know, they're the best in the league at creating stars. And having someone like Ja, who has the star power to win this series in advance, would be great.
Speaking of your guy, A-Rod, he sat courtside with his new woman at the Timberwolves game. It's the first time that he was spotted with his new woman since J-Lo and Ben Affleck got engaged. This seems like a quick turnaround, but then again, these people are millionaires and it is sort of Hollywood. Eddie, as an A-Rod guy, what do you make of this? Are you just happy to see him moving along with his life? We were getting worried for a while. It looked like he was putting on a couple pounds.
A-Rod, I mean, I think it clearly was, you know, once the J-Lo, Ben Affleck thing went public, he's like, well, I need to do something. And A-Rod, you know, has his type of women, and he found one, and he felt strong enough to get her a courtside.
So what do you think that process is like? A-Rod's like, oh, they're engaged, I got to find a woman now. Like, is there like an app for people of A-Rod stature where they can just, you know, type in their type and put them courtside where all the cameras can see?
If I had a guess, I'm assuming A-Rod has guys. He has people who just are like, A-Rod wants to meet you for dinner. And then, he, you know, she agreed. I'm not saying that their thing just started the week of, but I'm guessing it's probably fairly recent. And he, obviously, what's the better time to show off your new partner than the with the team you own, you know, hosting playoff games. So bring them out to the courtside seats.
It's like, hey, baby, you want to come to Minnesota? Yeah. Like that's usually the line that gets them there, right?
Well, wasn't she at the Clippers? Wasn't it the play-in game at Crypto? So it was in LA. So she was
much easier. The women in LA. They are much better looking than the women of Minnesota. Sorry, Minnesota women.
I don't even know where she's from, but he was just like, hey, you want to come to the minute? Like, we can go to Minneapolis. And she's like, oh, no, I'm busy. But, oh, okay. Well, actually, we have a game. You can come courtside at the Crypto.com Arena in LA. She's like, oh, yeah, I'm there.
He's like, suddenly I'm free.
But you know, like, A-Rod's a family man. He's always with his kids. He's making this Timberwolves team fun to watch. And they're obviously in the playoffs, so he's doing something right. And, you know, he's still doing his MLB stuff. I'm an A-Rod guy through and through. He gets a lot of hate, but I like A-Rod.
I don't dislike A-Rod. I also am a big J-Lo fan, so it's tough for me to see them apart. All right, people in the NBA are going crazy, specifically women in the NBA. A woman tried to glue herself to the court at the Timberwolves game, and then another woman tried to chain herself to the basket during the game. I told Megan Gailey that she should go to a game and one up all of them and go into labor on the court, because that would just really put this over the edge. What do you think about these weirdos?
I mean, what I don't get, like, they must have not thought this through, because let's start with the glue lady. Like, number one, the glue is only going to, like, negatively affect you. Like, you have to put glue on your skin.
Have you ever super glued your hands, like, your fingers together on accident? It's painful.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I guess I don't know what they were using, the Elmer's glue stick or something, and then just high fiving the hardwood. But like, it's only going to rip your skin off and then you look like an idiot. So you're not even getting your point across. And the other thing, the other one with the chains, it's like, how difficult is that? How do you chain? Like, I wouldn't even know how to properly chain myself to the thing. Like, you have to just do something so simple to get your message across. And that either that's some, you know, either I think Martin said this a few days ago, and it's actually a good point, is, you know, we've seen all these like streakers and people on like the field, and they run out there and like, you kind of see what their message is, whatever. I'm not saying to streak, but like interact on the actual, like the court where the people, the players are playing. And I think that's the move, because like NBA players aren't going to tackle you. And especially if you're a woman, more than likely the security guards will be a little bit easier than they would on a man. So it's like, you run out of the court, you hold your shirt that says you hate Glenn Taylor or whatever it is, save the chickens. And then at least, you know, your message is getting across, and you're not ripping skin off your hand or somehow tying yourself to the stanchion.
Well, I just think, you know, men, the easy option is let's streak on the field. But then you're banned for life. You get tackled by the security guards, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know if either of these women are going to be banned for life. I think that there would be more sensitivity, and they'd be like, oh, she's really going through a lot. She just has a lot going on. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but I don't think these women are going to be banned. I think that they could come back. And as I mentioned before, I think John Morant's dad is really hot. I also love John Morant's daughter, and John Morant, my fake last name is Morant. I think I should run onto the court to align with all these crazy women and just start telling people that John Morant is my son.
I mean, it's just, I still can't get, I didn't even know this is an issue with their owner, the Wolves owner, but like, now that I'm thinking of another funny one, they should have went to the game together, went to the team store, bought a basketball, and then they should have just played in the court.
The glue is the question. Like, you had to glue yourself, but I mean, how did you get the glue in? Women can't even bring purses in. They have to be the clear purses.
Yeah, how did you get a chain in?
Yeah. I think some security guard is getting fired in Minnesota because of this.
Yeah.
All right, let's send it over to our interview with Amina Smith, and she's going to talk to us about all things Celtics. All right, everyone, let's welcome her on. She is new to the Boston area, but she is from Brooklyn. Amina Smith. Amina, How you doing? It's a big week in Boston. You got a big night tonight. We got Celtics, Nets. It's the playoffs. Coming off of just an unbelievable finish, Jason Tatum at the buzzer. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm still trying to take in all that happened in that game one. I'm still recovering from game one. I'm excited to see kind of what happens in game two. But yeah, everybody's super excited and ready to see what happens later on tonight.
Now, are you conflicted at all? I know you're from Brooklyn, but now you work in Boston. Do you have a rooting interest in this game?
You know what? So I've been here about a little bit over a year now, and I will say that I am getting rooted interest in the Celtics. And it's weird because, of course, I'm from New York. I grew up a Knicks fan. And so coming into Boston is like coming into enemy territory. But, you know, me working with the team and just covering them night in and night out during the regular season, I have developed a genuine interest for this team. And I know it's tough to say. The inner Knicks fan in me is just like, I know my friends are probably going to listen to this, they're going to be like, oh my God, I cannot believe that she's saying this. But working alongside this team and covering them, you really start to get attached to the storylines and you want to see them succeed.
Wow, this is controversial. You have your Knicks colors on and suddenly you're switching over to the green team. And a lot of people hate Celtics fans, but you've had a different experience. And Celtics fans, they hate Kyrie Irving. How legitimate is this hate?
You know what? I was actually talking to somebody yesterday about the whole Kyrie Irving situation. And I think me as an outsider still getting used to Boston and the fans here in Boston, I'm still trying to figure out like why it's such a huge deal. And honestly, like Kevin Durant, I think yesterday he said it on ESPN. He kind of bottled it up really, you know, eloquently. He talked about the fact that, you know, fans in Boston, they once loved Kyrie Irving. They once cheered for Kyrie Irving. They once bought merchandise supporting Kyrie Irving. And then once a player like Kyrie leaves after saying that, you know, I would stay here if you would have me, and leaves them, it's almost like you break trust, you break loyalty. People have emotional ties to that. And I think that Kevin Durant really bottled that up perfectly, because I've been trying to figure it out. I'm like, why do people hate Kyrie Irving so much? I'm like, I understand that, yes, like he was here and, you know, he said that he was going to stay in Boston and then decided to leave. But players leave teams all the time around the NBA. But like I said, Kevin Durant really just bottled it up eloquently, perfectly, when you talk about those emotional ties that fans have to Kyrie Irving here in Boston.
Well, I get it, because I am a Patriots fan and I once loved Tom Brady, and then he left me and he talked about how great Tampa is and how terrible New England was. And a lot of Patriots fans hate me because I decided to hate Brady, but it's okay for them to hate Kyrie Irving. I actually live and I'm married to a Kyrie Irving hater and a Celtics fan. So I hear a lot all about this, and I get it. It's not so much about the stomping on the logo. It's not so much about the double birds behind the head. It's about how he came to Boston. The expectations were a championship. They pretty much got him for nothing. They had Tatum, Brown, Irving, and they walked away worse at the end of the trade. So this one seems personal. Are you concerned? I mean, there's a lot to be made. It's like, I saw this headline today. We are a gambling network here at Extra Points. Mm-hmm. We all gamble on things. And I saw this headline today, Adrian Wojnarowski, Woj, she's the newsbreaker. We all know Woj. He's very concerned for player safety with this gambling. And he pointed out Kyrie Irving. Now I'm gambling on the game. I'm taking Marcus Smart over in rebounds, and I'm taking Marcus Smart over in assists, because after he won Defensive Player of the Year, I'm all in on Marcus. And he showed maturity in the last game by passing the ball off to Jason Tatum. What do you think of Boston fans and the way they're gambling? Are you concerned about their safety at all? And I'm being sort of sarcastic when I say that.
Yeah, I could tell the sarcasm in your voice. I don't know if I'm concerned for safety at all in terms of, you know, fans being inside of TD Garden and the reaction to Kyrie Irving. It's almost like, you know, we're watching a story unfold where you have a villain that is Kyrie Irving coming into TD Garden and you have him going back and forth with the fans. And in some ways, I know Kyrie probably won't admit it. I think he kind of likes it.
He definitely likes it.
I think he kind of likes coming to Boston and being the villain and coming inside of TD Garden, hearing those boos rain down every single time he touches the ball. And then for him, the gratification of going and dropping 39 points, the fact that he can go and have his way out there on the court. I think that's what it is for Kyrie Irving, knowing that he's a villain here in this city, but also knowing that he has the full capability of going out there and dropping 30, 40 points out there on the court.
So what do you think? The Celtics win this in six? Do you think the Nets win tonight? What's your prediction?
It's going to be tough. I got the Celtics winning this series in seven. I think they're the better, well-rounded team. I think Brooklyn just doesn't have the defense to keep up with the Celtics. I think tonight it'll be a tough one. I think KD is not going to come back going 9 of 24 from the field like how he did in game one. He's going to come back with a vengeance. And that's the scary thing, is that we know that Kevin Durant on any given night can drop a 40 or 50 piece out there on the court. So I would say tonight, I'm still going to give it to the Celtics. Again, I lean on the fact that their defense is superior all throughout the NBA. And I think that you can't get through a series. You can't get through the playoffs without having defense. And even if you have Kyrie Irving drop 40 and you have Kevin Durant drop 40, that's only 80 points. That's only 80 points. You can't win a game in the playoffs with only 80 points. So if they don't have that third player to step up and drop 30 or 40, then they're kind of like, they just have nothing to go up against with this Celtics team. So I'll take the Celtics tonight and Celtics winning this series in seven.
Well, now, Mina, you hit the nail on the head when you said defense, because this Boston team has had an unbelievable turnaround, and it's all been credited to the defense, and part of it, Jason Tatum finding his way. I mean, we know that he's a star, and we've really got to see him blossom in the second half of the season. But when you look at the Celtics defensively, you're close to this team. You're around them every single week. What was the difference maker when they finally clicked and they started playing defense that turned their season around?
I think it was everyone buying into what Ime Udoka kind of came in with, the idea of the fact that the one thing that he pointed out when he first got here was the assists. And I remember him even saying it in the press conference and calling out Brad Stevens, now president of basketball operations. He's like, no offense, but we got to get those numbers up as well. But I think people, the guys on the team, they were really buying into what Ime Udoka, the groundwork that he laid for this team. I think at the beginning of the season, you know, we talked a lot about chemistry and whether or not all these guys were on the same page. There were a lot of like meetings. There was a lot of Marcus Smart in the media calling out Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And I say, quote unquote, calling out, because if you ask Marcus Smart, he will say it's not calling out, but you know, to each his own. But I think a lot of those things came into play when you talk about this team turning around. And then once January hit, it was almost like a light switch flipped. And this team realized that, okay, well, we have all the pieces and we have all the things that we need, all the ingredients to be a great team in the NBA. And it was like everyone bought into it. And now we're seeing the results of that.
So what do you think of the rivalry between Deuce Tatum and Marcus Smart? Is that going to play a role? Is Deuce going to have any shenanigans? I know he was pulling Marcus Smart's shorts on the sideline as Smart was trying to inbound a pass. Is Deuce going to interfere with the playoffs at all for the Celtics?
I don't know if Deuce is going to be interfering with the playoffs at all. I think it's a very serious time here in Boston. We know that Deuce is a superstar, not only in Boston, all throughout the NBA, and especially inside of TD Garden. But this feud, this love-hate feud between Marcus Smart and Deuce Tatum, it's must-see TV. So
it's,
if
not
you're
getting
looking,
enough coverage.
It's not getting enough coverage. Honestly, I'm going to speak to some of our producers and see if we get some more content on the timeline of Deuce Tatum and Marcus Smart going at it. But I think Marcus Smart is going to be locked in for this first round of the playoffs, and hopefully Deuce isn't pulling on his shorts on the sideline.
Well, I think that you really need to talk to your producers, because after last night, John Morant, my favorite player, his daughter, Kari, she completely stole the show. So I think Deuce has his work cut out for him, because the spotlight is going to be completely taken from him by Kari. And listen, Deuce is a cutie. I got all my money on Kari, because she's way cuter. Did you see her spin in the basketball?
I did not see her spin in the basketball, but I have seen Kari pop up on my timeline several times, and I will retweet that content. I'm like, to cleanse the timeline, some wholesome content, let's get these babies on the timeline right now.
I also have a huge crush on John Morant's father. I think that he is a looker, and we have not seen
him. Does he not like Usher?
He looks exactly
like Usher.
Just like Usher. So my fake TV name is Megan Morant. I named myself after Ja. And I think that I might have to say that Ja might be my kid. I know the math doesn't really check out, but I would be okay saying that, you know, Ja's father and I had a little one night. You know, why not? He's a great looking guy. All about Ja Morant. all about these NBA playoffs. Now, you work with a guy that my producer, Eddie Spaghetti, and I have a little history with. We hate him. So tell us everything that you hate about Brian Scalabrine. Go.
You know what's crazy is I love working with Scal. People ask me that
too.
Question. I love working with Scal. I mean, he's such a huge personality. He keeps everyone on their toes, especially me. I never know what's going to come out of his mouth on live TV, but I just roll with it. But he makes coming to work absolutely a joy. Just so much fun night in and night out. I know what to expect and to expect the unexpected. The most chaotic thing ever that could happen is what I expect every time I come into work.
Do you have any funny Scal stories that you want to share with the audience? I'm sure we have a lot of White Mamba fans out there.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I will say this. So Scal, in his mind, although he is our analyst, he also thinks that he's not only the host, but also the producer. So he likes to come in when we do the post game shows. He likes to hurricane into the studio. I could always see him out the side of my eye. He is running into the studio. He's like doing like some type of drills and workouts. I'm like, I don't know what he's getting ready for. I guess he's getting ready for our post game show. And he will slide in with our like with our chairs that have wheels on them at the bottom. And he's ready to go. He's like, okay, like I'm going to do this. I want to talk about this. I'm like, okay, well, I guess I will throw out the complete rundown because clearly Scal has come up with his own rundown that we're going to go into. It's so funny. If you watch the post game shows, you will absolutely notice when Scal takes over the show and I have to like rein him back in. But for me, it's always just his presence in the studio doing the drills on the side. And I can see him at the side of my, I'm trying to be serious on TV. And I see him doing completely utter chaotic things on the side before he comes into the show. So I could go on and on about Scal, but definitely a joy to work with.
Oh, he's the best, but you got to tell him he thinks he's the host. He thinks he's the producer and he thinks he's still on the team because he always says we, and it just cracks me up because Scal is a competitor. He's out there working out every morning and people give him shit, but he can still ball.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I told Scal, we were actually talking during the pregame show in game one, and he was talking about how he does pick up games with Bruce Brown. And he made the joke and he said, look, I can prepare you for a lot of things, but I can't prepare you to guard Jason Tatum. And then he was asking me, he's like, yeah, we got to get you on the rec center as well. Get you to do some one-on-ones. I'm like, you don't want to see me do any one-on-ones. I ran track and there's a reason why I ran track.
You ran track. What events did you do?
I ran the eighth, the mile and cross country at University of Ooh. South Carolina.
Ooh.
Yeah, all the long stuff that no one wants to do.
So I did 5K, 10K. So people were at least mildly interested in yours. Mine, they go get snacks, which I totally understand and respect. Amina, I don't know if you can bet. I don't know if that's legal or not, but just pretend like you're betting on this game. What bet are you taking?
Well, I like the Marcus Smart bet about the over on assists. He's averaging about 6 assists per game so far during the regular season. I think that's one of his strong points. I think he'll go over on assists. So it'll be a Marcus Smart type of night in terms of him being a floor general out there.
Here we go. I just want to get the numbers so we have it. Marcus Smart, 6.5 for assists. Ooh. I like the over on that.
I like the, I like the over on Marcus Smart for 6.5 assists. I'll take the over on that one. Like I said, Marcus Smart, he's really embraced this point guard position, and he's trying to be a floor general out there.
Is Time Lord coming back?
Ooh, I hope so. Fingers crossed. Honestly, like the most optimistic report I've seen is that, you know, he could come back late in the first round. I don't know if I really want him to come back in the first round, just coming back too soon from surgery. I know he's probably itching to come back. I'd rather see him in the second round, well-rested, going up against a Bucks team that the Celtics will really need him against.
Okay, how far do you think the Celtics can take it? Is this a championship-caliber team?
I think that there's potential for this to be a championship caliber team. I think if they get past the Bucks, that the Celtics, they could go all the way to the finals. Like that's the team to beat. The Bucks are the team to beat in the East. And if they can get past the Bucks, I would not be surprised if they go to the NBA finals.
Okay. One more before we let you go. How much does Marcus Smart winning Defensive Player of the Year give the Celtics that extra push and that extra swagger that they need in the playoffs?
You know what's crazy? I feel like they already had that swagger. Like, I feel like Marcus Smart already knew that he was the best defensive player in the NBA. You had players like Grant Williams, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, like, lobbying for him at the podium literally almost every single game towards the end of the season. This team, even being around them, you could tell that they just, the aura, the vibe is just different. And just like Jaylen Brown said earlier in the season, that the energy was about to shift, it definitely shifted and they embraced it. And that swag, everything is there. All the ingredients are there for them to be successful in the postseason.
All right, Amina, thank you so much for joining us. Everybody, you can check out Amina on NBC Sports Boston. She's got a front row seat to covering this Celtics team, and she's going to keep us locked in on all the drama between Deuce Tatum and Marcus Smart. Amina, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
She was great. I loved everything about Amina. She was really cool. I think we're going to have her on again if the Celtics win this series. Eddie, I know you think that the Nets are probably going to win, but if the Celtics win, we're going to get Amina back on.
I'm totally with that, and I also love hearing from a person who's originally from New York and has to make the trek to Boston and live there.
There it is. But she loves it.
Yeah.
Well, you liked it too.
I love Boston. I love it. I'm sad that I haven't been back there since May of 2016, so I'd love to get back to Boston. Only good positive experiences there.
And you're going to go to Lulu's to see Olivia's family.
I think now she's too famous. She won't be there, but it is a great place. I remember, oh man, you get the bucket of champagne. They gave you the different juices for your mimosas. The food was awesome. It's a great spot.
Parking is tricky over there, but I do like Lulu's. Yes. And it's in Boston. It's just like, I was there this past weekend. It's like, man, they're building everywhere and there's not even a lot of room to build. All right. One more topic before we say goodbye to all of our listeners, Gerrit Cole. Oh my God. This is so funny. Everybody who hasn't been following or living under a rock, Gerrit Cole last year was in a bit of trouble for a couple of reasons, but we're going to focus on the one reason. The spider tack, obviously he was suspended. He was unbelievable with the spider tack. He hasn't been able to use it since, and he's been terrible. I think this might be one of the most epic collapses of a very good pitcher and that we've probably ever seen. And his most recent outing was against the Tigers. I think he made it, what, a couple
innings? It was one, I think, 1.2 innings, shortest outing of his career, yeah.
Yeah, it was a little over an inning. And what did he give up, 7 runs?
No, the Yankees won the game. He only gave up, I think it was 2 runs by then. He just walked like 6 batters.
There it is. He walked 6 batters. You are a Yankees fan.
I am, yeah.
What do you think of this?
Well, like I said, they won the game. So number one, that's a good thing. The next thing that you worry about is there an injury? So if there's no injury, they check him out, the MRI and whatever you have to do. If he's clear, then this is not a cop-out answer, but this is something, a couple weeks ago, people were complaining about why are they still doing the runner on second base?
And the
answer is because of the short spring training and how everything was delayed and the off season. So now they don't want players to get injured and stuff like that. And to me, I guess, and Cole made that dumb comment about the opening day thing with his pitching start time was moved back like 3 or 4 minutes for like the opening song or something, whatever they did on the field. And he's a guy that's like clearly robotic.
Baseball players are crazier than any other athletes mentally. So those types of things can throw a guy off. I'll give it to him there.
Agreed. So what I'm deducing here is that maybe his off-season program was not what it normally was. Like now, you can make the spider tack jokes like everyone has been doing, but he did pitch last year without spider tack and he was fine last year. He was in the race for the Cy Young last year at certain points. So, I mean, he clearly could pitch without the spider tack. So I'm going to say, number one, it's early in the season, and two, his off-season workouts program, that everything being delayed with the MLB lockout kind of threw him off, and I would not be shocked come, it's April 20th right now as we're recording, I would not be shocked come, mid-June, end of June, all of a sudden you're like, Gerrit Cole is striking out 14 people a game and his ERA is, below 3, so I'm not too concerned yet, but I think
it's something to monitor.
Yeah, I think so too. But I also think just this first season, this first month of the season for every player is they're struggling. A lot of guys aren't hitting the ball. Pitchers are, they're only throwing like 80 pitches and they're getting them taken out in like the 3rd, 4th inning. So as it is across the board, like baseball, like starting pitchers aren't winning games. It's always a bullpen. And I think, obviously the shortened offseason really caused that. So if he's still pitching like crap, in 2 months from now, and you want to say, hey, Eddie, you were wrong about this, and I'll say, I'll eat my plate of crow. But right now, I'm not ultra worried about Gerrit Cole if it's a non-injury.
All right. Well, or you have guys like Dave Roberts just ruining baseball and pulling Clayton Kershaw when he has a perfect game going.
Exactly. Great point.
Even though he's only thrown 80 pitches. Today, I was looking at my White Sox. They are playing the, I don't know what the heck their new name is called. The Guardians. Yeah, I haven't adjusted to it yet. And I was really thinking about betting the White Sox to be up by a half a run through five innings, and they are down 10. So Dallas Keuchel's on the mound. He's given up a grand slam already, and it's not looking good for my White Sox today. But they've had a very impressive start to the season, so I won't overreact just yet. Luis Robert looks on fire. I believe Brother Bri and I both put – I definitely did, and I think it was Brother Bri who said it MVP future odds on Luis Robert. So if you haven't done it yet, definitely do it because he looks like – your early leader in that category. What do you think? Oh, I just got another notification. Maybe the White Sox heard me talking about them. What did they just do? Probably gave up another run. Oh no, Tim Anderson hit an RBI double. So my White Sox, they're listening to me right now and they're coming back. They're only down by 9. Let's go. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to us, Megan Fun of Sports. We will be back with an episode next week. Thank you to Amina Smith of NBC Sports Boston for joining us on today's episode. Happy 420, everyone. Smoke them if you got them, and we will see you next week.